Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour. So nice to have you with us on this May the 11th on the West Coast, now May the 12th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones. Oh, wow. Lots happening around the world. First of all, today is sort of an anniversary for me personally. This is the day I got started in music many, many years ago. And for some reason, when this day comes around, I subconsciously recall that. And so I'm in a really good mood tonight. And the top cover tonight hopefully is going to put everybody in a good mood. Maybe not everybody, but those that deserve to be in a good mood. Let's put it that way. People are fed up with trying to communicate to the lawmakers in Washington, D.C., whether it's their congressmen or their senators. They're tired of sending emails and faxes and letters to all these people and not even getting so much as a response or any recognition other than the occasional form letter that basically is a scapegoat. It's a very non-personal way to brush someone aside. And we keep reminding ourselves that we have certain rights guaranteed us under the Constitution. That is, if our United States Constitution is a genuine document with genuine remedies, the types of checks and balances that we learn about from early on in our studies of social studies and history, either in elementary school or in what many call middle school, junior high. And of course, this goes on throughout the rest of our lives. We're told what the laws are, what our rights are, and it's definitely something that is falling by the wayside these days when you look at all the signing statements and executive orders and, of course, the outrageous bills that come out that continuously infringe upon our rights. And above all, we have sovereign rights under our Creator. Many refer to the Creator as God. And we are sovereign beings, and we deserve to be free. We were created that way. I doubt that any of us, if we can recall the soul contract that we made when we decided to come to this planet and live through this hell, that we relinquished any of that sovereignty, any of that freedom. And I want to make a distinction between the word freedom and the word liberty, because to me, liberty is, although it's implied to mean freedom, it's a very conditional type of freedom. Think of the sailor that sets sail, ends up in a port in a foreign land, and they might get a 12-hour pass on liberty, and they have to come back by a certain time, or they're considered AWOL, and they face the consequences. Liberty is a conditional freedom. It has time limits. It has restrictions. And freedom is something totally different. Think of how an eagle soars without the interference of mankind. Basically, an eagle doesn't have any enemies except nature itself. And we must begin to recognize that God created us as sovereign beings and that we have a right to be sovereign. Now, tonight's guest is going to talk about a remedy that very few know about. In fact, I've known this for some time. I haven't personally acted upon this in the manner in which he's going to describe, and yet in my research, in my journalism, and certainly this radio show is an expression of my understanding of what he's going to be sharing with you, the listening audience. With that, I would like to welcome to Evident Footprints for the first time the national spokesperson for AmericanGrandJury.org, Mr. Sam Sewell. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hi, Don. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you. I should say good morning, since it is morning in your time zone. And I appreciate you staying up late enough to appear on the show tonight. Tell us what American Grand Jury is about and how this came about, if you would, please.
Okay, well, we'll talk about the organization first, and then I'll fill you in on some of the constitutional premises behind the organization. But the organization was started by a guy named Bob Campbell, and Bob had been doing some research with some of our consulting attorneys, and we found out that there is a right that the American people have that they haven't exercised in a long time. The right didn't go away. It's just that the application of that right fell into disuse. And the right was the forming of grand juries. Our founding fathers were smart enough to anticipate that there might come a time in the future where the government, all three branches of the government, were involved in a conspiracy against the citizens. In other words, the checks and balances didn't work. And so they empowered the people directly to form grand juries. The purpose of a grand jury is to investigate government corruption. So, of course, it can't be part of the government, exists independent of the government, or at least it can exist independent of the government. And all it takes is for 25 citizens to decide that they're going to hold a grand jury. There's certain protocols for doing it. You have to swear on an oath that you're going to conduct yourself in according to those protocols. All of the proceedings and all of the members of the grand jury are secret. Nobody can know who they are in order to avoid intimidation from the people who are being investigated.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he thought, well, gee, how are we going to put this together? And boy, did he come up with a brilliant plan. What he did is he said, look, there's no rules at all that say that grand juries, where they need to meet. They can meet in a church, they can meet in a public park, and he said, why not have them meet on the internet? So what Bob did was create a national grand jury, created a virtual grand jury room. It's a website that has a chat room associated with it, and the only way to get into it is to have the password, and the only way to get the password is to be a member of the grand jury or Bob and myself. Bob's the foreman. I'm the associate foreman of the grand jury, and I also function as the PR guy for the operation. And people from 14, 15 different states signed up for the first grand jury. How it works is you sign up, and when you sign up, you get a password to take a look at the evidence. You go through the evidence, you fill out a survey that shows that you have reviewed the evidence, you can make comments on the evidence. The purpose of this is you can't just walk in and say, I already know he's guilty. That can't be done. That's not the proper way to run a grand jury. So all of the grand jury members take a look at the evidence, certify that they have examined the evidence, and then when that's finished, that process is finished, then on a given date, we all sign in at the same time and vote. And on April 29th, the first national grand jury, American grand jury, met, and they indicted Barack Obama for fraud and treason.
Why am I not surprised?
Well, the evidence, that's the whole thing. A lot of people haven't really looked at the issue. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of amazed at my fellow citizens, because when that news came out, of course, all of a sudden people started getting curious. And I had no idea that people were at the very start of understanding this. I got sort of jaded about it, because I've been involved in this since for months now. Back in March, I published an article on my blog entitled "Something's Coming, Something Big," and it was the article that Leo D'Onofrio had written, outlining the right of citizens to form grand juries completely independent of the judiciary. And I knew where that was headed, and I was just waiting for somebody to team up with.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob and I made a great team, because I had already done all the evidence. I had researched the evidence so thoroughly that I was correcting the lawyers involved. Found mistakes in the filings that had been made by two of the rather prominent eligibility attorneys. And so the evidence that I pulled together was more comprehensive and more accurate than the evidence that had been presented in the lawsuits in civil court. Now, you need to keep in mind, this is something that people also have a hard time understanding. What we're talking about with this grand jury, this is not a lawsuit. This is criminal charges. That's an entirely different kind of legal animal.
Mm-hmm.
Criminal charges.
I was going to ask a question, or actually two short questions here. First of all, this would be called a citizen's grand jury, and it's treated in the same fashion that a secret grand jury would be treated on the basis of a pending criminal indictment. Let's say, for example, the foundation is based on what is called an information. Is that correct?
Yes, that's
okay.
Exactly right. The type of proceeding that a grand jury is, it's purely accusatory. The person being accused does not have an attorney present. They cannot introduce any evidence. As a matter of fact, a grand jury doesn't even have an obligation to inform the person if they have been indicted.
Mm-hmm.
And all it does is accuse. It doesn't make any pronouncements. It doesn't make any decisions. Its idea, the idea of a grand jury, is to decide whether or not there's enough evidence that the court should take a look at it. It's sort of a way of doing away with frivolous criminal charges.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, sometimes overactive or politically ambitious prosecutors want to carry out a prosecution, and what the grand jury will do is say, look, there isn't enough evidence here, so, you know, we don't return an indictment when that happens. In this particular instance, all we're doing now, the second stage, is taking the presentment papers. In other words, when you do an indictment, then you then have to present it to the various law enforcement and judicial jurisdictions. And that's what's happening now. As a matter of fact, the April 29th grand jury packets that contain all of the information are just now arriving in the hands of the people who will be doing the presentations. I fully suspect that sometime this morning, Monday morning, that those packets arrive. So we should be having those presentments made at, our goal is to make the presentment in every jurisdiction in the United States. There are over 3,000 counties in the United States,
mm-hmm.
and I know that sounds like a really lofty goal, but that's actually what we want to do. And the way that the grand jury movement is galloping forward, that goal doesn't seem quite as lofty as I originally thought it was. Can I go on about that for a minute, about how this thing is catching on?
Yes. I want to interject with one more question here, and point out that it seems to me that the traditional legal system seems to have the cart before the horse. There's always the involvement, at least you hear about this when and if it's reported in the media, that there's a grand jury investigation going on, and it'll be under the direction of a prosecutor. Now, we hear this continuously in regard to Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald in Illinois. I think he's probably in Cook County, but he's presiding over a lot of the so-called court corruption investigations that are going on there, and I'm privy to much of what's going on up in that area, in all across the board. So there doesn't necessarily have to be a prosecutor involved, is what I want to get at before you go into that.
You are exactly right about that, and people have a really hard time understanding that, because the way grand juries have been conducted in modern times is that it isn't a law, but it's almost become traditional that the grand jury is an extension of the prosecutor's office, which is why they have that kind of humorous thing that a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich, and that's because grand juries are seen as just a rubber stamp organization to do whatever the prosecutor wants done. And
yes,
that has been the way grand juries have been operating for, let's say, ever since the mid-1940s is when the traditional role of the grand jury began to be diluted from what its original intention was. But that doesn't mean that the law has changed one little bit. The law hasn't changed at all.
Yeah, okay. And, now, I apologize for interrupting, so I'll let you roll until you have to catch your breath. How's that?
Well, okay, that sounds like a deal. So here's what's going on with the American grand jury right now.
Okay.
The April 29th, we kind of joke about it. We say the graduating class of April 29. Now, what we mean by that is every one of those people actually went through how to run a grand jury 101. So they come back to their home state, trained on how to run a grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
And so grand juries are now popping up all over the place, and the foremen of those grand juries are this original April 29th class. Now, in addition, and then there's about 20 states now that are forming grand juries or have formed grand juries. And what Bob Campbell has done at AmericanGrandJury.org is he is providing the internet setup complete with these virtual grand jury rooms for all of these people at no charge whatsoever. So what it really boils down to, if you live in Randalia, Iowa, the reason I mentioned that is that's a town of 145 people that I was raised in when I was a little boy. The nearest county seat is probably 30 miles away, but you don't even have to drive to the county seat. If you own a computer and if you're on the internet, you can participate in the national grand jury. And when these people get done doing that, they then start forming other grand juries that are being pulled together. And for instance, one of the ladies that was in the April 29th class has already formed a grand jury in Texas. And they're going to be meeting in their virtual grand jury meeting room, I believe, later this week to examine the evidence. And so there's another thing happened out of this. I don't know if you've heard about Lieutenant Commander Walter Fitzpatrick.
Yes, I have, actually, yes.
Well, he signed on as a volunteer.
Hmm.
He had already filed a treason charge against Mr. Obama as a military man. And what he did was sign on, and when he signed on, he brought with him hundreds of volunteer people, most of them military, who have agreed to act as agents for the American grand jury. And what that means is even though they did not participate in the grand jury, they can operate on the proxy authority of the grand jury, and these people can do the presentments. So we have hundreds of people going to jurisdictions around the United States making the presentments on this indictment. And then something else important happened since the last time we talked, Don.
Okay.
On the 9th, which was this last Saturday, the second indictment came down from American Grand Jury. So there are now two outstanding indictments for fraud and treason against Mr. Obama from American grand jury. And then you also need to remember that there was an earlier indictment from a grand jury in Georgia. A fellow named Carl Swenson set that up. And Carl Swenson, over this past weekend, reconvened his grand jury, took the same information that was presented by Lieutenant Commander Fitzpatrick, and added a charge of treason to what the Georgia grand jury had done. So what I'm saying, in a very short period of time, we've got three indictments that I know of. Actually, there's more, but I don't really have that at the tip of my tongue as to what the information is. Some of them have just completed the indictments. Now let me tell you that's the good news. Here's the troublesome news. The prosecutors and the judges have been doing it counter to the Constitution for so long that they need to be educated. You walk into a prosecutor's office with this citizen's grand jury indictment, and they'll say, "We don't talk to citizens. We only talk to other lawyers. What's a citizen's grand jury? There wasn't a prosecutor in that grand jury. The judge didn't assign a grand jury. I haven't heard anything about it." You know, this is kind of a squirrely deal. You can be invited to leave the office now. Now, that is the kind of response that these people that need to be educated as to what the citizens' rights are giving to these grand jury members who try to do the presentments. So as of now, several attempts have been made, three that I know of making the presentments, and the presentments have been rejected. Now, they pretty much know what to do with that. What I mean is they come back later, and when they come back later, they come with a video camera and a digital recorder, politely now, and you say, "Well, I need to document this because, of course, we need to take it further, and besides, here's a copy of the law that shows that citizens can indeed form grand juries without even the knowledge of the judiciary," mm-hmm. and try to educate these people who have been doing it their way for a long time and aren't quite used to the citizens acting up the way they are. We don't quite show up with pitchforks and torches. We try to be polite but firm about it, and we also make it very clear that what we're doing is documenting what it is we need to document in order to take the next step. Now, here's the thing that's important about this. One of the ways, probably one of the few ways to actually remove a prosecuting attorney is for dereliction of duty. If a prosecuting attorney has a crime called to his attention and he does not refer that crime to trial and act as the state's representative in prosecuting that crime, he can be removed from office. And that's true in every state of the union.
I think it also applies to judges and anyone in law enforcement or in any civil position.
That's exactly right. We're not taking on the feds on this, because the feds back in 1946 passed some rules. They aren't constitutional, but they passed some rules that don't allow federal grand juries to be citizen convened. Now, in other words, what we'd have to do is take on a fight all the way to the Supreme Court before we ever got our goal. And that's not what we're doing. We're not trying to get a fight in the Supreme Court. We can change what the feds do later, because we don't need the feds. We can do it at the state level.
I think it falls under misprision of felony. In other words, is that correct?
Yes, the phrase they use is acquiescent.
Okay.
That the prosecutor and the judge that refuses to take action on a crime called to their attention by citizens is thought of as acquiescent. The next stage is to think of them as co-conspirators.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they are refusing to take action on a crime, they actually become a party to that crime. Now, just simply educating these modern attorneys as to the rules of a grand jury is the next step that we take. Now, these folks are lawyers, And I'm sure when they start looking at it, they're going to find it out. As a matter of fact, we even have quotations from law professors and from constitutional attorneys helping to educate them, so that we even did the research for them. And so we leave that packet with what the research is, and we get them to say on camera and in a digital recorder that they are refusing to accept the presentment. And then we leave them with our little information. And then what we do is we call them back again to decide if indeed they'd like to change their mind. Well, as you probably know, most of these prosecuting attorneys are politicians. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah. Elect-
and they don't want, you know, they don't want a problem. And it's no skin off their nose. All they have to do is you know, ask for a trial, and then the heat is on the judge rather than them. And so they have all kinds of incentive to go along with us once they find that, you know, that old thing about the carrot and the stick. The carrot is you can be a hero to a number of your constituencies, and the stick is if you don't do that, you might lose your next election. And that's enough of an incentive for most of these prosecuting attorneys to go ahead and ask for a trial.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the and the other thing is that when we provide the research for them, and it's very credible research, Susan Brenner, who is a distinguished professor, that's a title they give them, a distinguished professor of law and technology, wrote, she's the person that authored the book, The Federal Grand Jury Practice, and she, we give her notes as well as notes from Justice Scalia, and essentially educate them in a very short order of time as to what the actual rules are regarding citizen grand juries. And I don't really think beyond that there would be much resistance. But if there is, and then let's say that it's in a heavily Democratic county, and the guy adds up what his risks are, and he says, gee whiz, I live here in this almost completely Democratic county, and if I'm the guy known as the person that goes along with indicting Obama and asking for a trial, I probably won't get elected next year. And that's a difficult situation, but we still have another ace up our sleeve. Is then what we do is we try to go to the media, and by the media I am not talking about the Alphabet TV news, and I'm not talking about the newspapers because they're just flat out boycotting this entire idea. I think you may have noticed, Don, that here just a few months ago, there were polls, several of them, that cross-validated one another, that more people now get their news off the Internet than they do from television or newspapers. So
mm-hmm.
We don't need the television, and it would be nice if they did their jobs and were honest, but to be real honest about it, we don't need them. The article that summarizes the evidence, I need to be careful here now. I'm not talking about the evidence that the grand jury processed. That is secret information. But all of the evidence that is available to the general public at various places on the Internet, I have gathered together into one document. As a matter of fact, it was the document we used for orientation for our grand jurors. In other words, read this first because this summarizes the whole thing. Then we let you into the jury room and you get to look at the actual documents and that kind of thing. That document is now, you know how when you put something into Google,
mm-hmm.
you have to go 10 pages into Google before you run out of references to this article. So what that means is not only is it published on my blog, but it's published on 100 other blogs. You know what happens when something gets published on Free Republic, for instance. In the space of less than 24 hours, there were over 10,000 hits on that article.
Yeah.
And then a very prestigious organization called Intellectual Conservative decided that they would publish it. And that just really ramped up the readership on this. And for your listening audience, the name of the article, now this is a little cumbersome, but I'll tell you a simple way to get a hold of it, but here's the actual title. It's AKA Obama fans all together now say, oh, my God. All right? Now, how you find it, yeah, if you can just do, oh, my God, and AKA Obama, you can find it. But I checked this out myself. If you simply type my name into Google, Sam Sewell, that's SamSewell, and just the three letters, OMG, and it'll pop up. First one that pops up is from the blog site Investigating Obama. That's Arlen Williams. Arlen's a good friend of mine. And okay. He did a really good job of formatting it and managed to preserve all 24 of the embedded links. Those embedded links are every bit as important as the text, because I'll write a paragraph and then I include a link that takes you to the evidence that supports what it was I had written in that paragraph. And it's very comprehensive. It's 3,800 words and with 24 embedded links. But if you actually take a look at it and you read it, you will probably be as well educated as anybody in the United States as far as the outstanding evidence against Mr. Obama. Now, there's an exception to that. There is also secret evidence and secret charges that are being made by the grand jury, and that information is not available to the public. So, of course, it also is not involved in the article that I wrote.
Okay. Now, I might add, and this is for your information, the listening audience knows this pretty well, that I've done a series of articles, which is in a compendium of genealogical studies. First, two pieces done on John McCain and his ineligibility to run as president, and then I've done parts 3 through 6 on Barack Obama. These, for the most part, were published in the Idaho Observer. And I have recently, as of April 25th, I released a photographic analysis of what I determined were compiled fraudulent photos. He is not in these photos except that his image was added, or someone with a likeness of his was added rather sloppily and poorly into these compilations. And if you haven't read it, I urge you to read that, and there's probably more evidence that you could present to any of your grand juries.
Let me put it this way. I saw the photos. I don't think I got it from your article. I think I saw the photos from someone who independently published those photos. But you're right, they are rather crudely done. When I think back, for instance, on the rather obvious forgery on that certification of live birth, the one that was on Obama's website, I just find it really hard to believe that it was done so crudely.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean is that, look, let me put it this way. Down at the bottom of that certification of live birth, it says, altering this document makes it invalid.
Absolutely.
And then up at the top, you see that they blocked out the numbers.
Yes, that's been a point I've brought up many times on this show and in other interviews I've done on other shows, yes.
Yeah, how much do you have to go to before you decide that isn't a valid document? They altered it and put it on the website and called it an alternate. Not only that, everybody keeps calling it a birth certificate, and it doesn't have anything to do with a birth certificate.
Yes, and it says a father's race, African, and African is not a race. And in those days, they would have said Negro, possibly colored, but more likely in Hawaii, they would have said Negro. And there are other anomalies. If you look at the lower left-hand corner, and I'm pulling this from the top of my head, but there's a revision number, the year that the paper stock itself was created, and the whole layout, the border, everything. If you take a genuine document, there was one study done where they took a document of a woman born in 1933 that had this document printed on that same revised paper. When you size the papers up over next to each other on using the same grid as a size marker, you can see that the background of let's say the embossed background is of a different size, and there are many anomalies in there. There's pixelation that occurs at the same magnification level, which is impossible with the same size document. In other words, it was a photocopied document or a scanned document, and it was altered to remove certain information and then reinsert the information that they wanted to put in there. It's totally bogus. I counted 13 glaring discrepancies in that. Now, another document expert found 20. I suppose I could have spent a lot more time maybe just pointing out the each specific, but I generalized the revision number. The paper should have looked the same on both copies, and it did not. That right there shows it's a forgery. It's a fraud. It's lacking the stamp. It's lacking the signatures. They tried to mimic a stamp, and they did a rather poor job of that. And there's this same anomaly with the so-called Indonesian adoption paper. Stanley Ann Dunham's signature at her high school in her yearbook said Stanley or Stanley Dunham. She never used Ann as the middle name. And she did not, she had a very simple way of making her S, and her T was very proper and very straight. The upward flow of the T itself before crossing it went up straight and came down straight over the line. Yet this one in Indonesia looked like an L with a slanted cross of through the T. She majors very, very straight. So you can see right there that it's fraudulent. The way she connected the letters was completely different.
I've got a little quotation for you here, Don. I don't know if you've seen the forensic expert Sandra Lyons and her analysis of it. This is a federal document examiner who's done this for years. Mm-hmm. She has the kind of resume that, you know, it takes more than one page and has had lots of experience in courts examining documents, and I'm quoting now, "I can state with certainty that the certification of live birth presented on the internet by the various groups, which includes the Daily Cause and Obama's campaign and factcheck.org and others, cannot be relied upon as genuine."
Yes.
As straightforward as you can be, and it isn't like she's the only one. I don't know if you reviewed Dr. Polarek's analysis. But that's probably the most comprehensive one. Have you done that yet?
I've seen that too, yes.
And that, yeah. if we have people that, if we have forensic document geeks out there, those two documents, as a matter of fact, the article I told you that I wrote, mm-hmm. contains the links for Dr. Polarek's work as well as the more complete analysis that Sandra Ramsey Lyons gave that I just read you the quotation from. So if you find that Oh My God article, you will also be able to take a look at Dr. Polarek's analysis of that certification of live birth. Mm-hmm. But the point I make in that article I wrote, though, is there's so many really strange and odd and inexplicable and suspicious kinds of twists and turns in this story that when it's all over, they're going to have to hire that guy Don Brown, you know, the one that did the, what did they call that? The guy that wrote the article about the search for the Holy Grail?
Mm-hmm.
Wrote that big novel that was very popular.
Yeah. Holy Blood, Holy Grail, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the all of the twists and turns. We'll talk about a convoluted plot. I mean, it's worse than Charles Dickens. If this story is going to make somebody a wonderful storyline, and it's probably will be turned into a historical novel, and it'll probably be even turned into a movie. You know, if you thought All the President's Men was an interesting plot line with lots of twists and turns. My gosh, this one's a lot more complicated than that.
Well, I have movies coming out, and I'm not really going to go into any detail, but it's going to reveal the answers people have been looking for. I'll just say that. That's a very bold and brazen comment to make, but I assure you, you will be overwhelmed with the information that's going to come out in Part 7 of my Three Stooges Go to Washington series. But
okay, I've never heard anybody claiming that you were shy and reserved anyway, Don.
you're saying that in jest, I hope.
Yes, I am.
I'm not trying to toot my own horn. These articles have not been refuted whatsoever. In fact, I come out with some very interesting photos that no one had ever seen before. These photos came out through my research and through some eyewitnesses. I can tell you they weren't in Kansas, where the story supposedly was born. And I remind you and the listening audience that Dorothy Gale still has claim to Kansas.
That's right.
And these were CIA operatives, the Dunhams. They're surrogates. They're in no way related. And what people are finally going to be able to do is sort out this myth of the single woman that supposedly married a black man. This is a fiction. I'm telling you, flat out, this is a fiction. Hawaii is a fiction, and Kenya is a fiction. Now, if you study the photographs that I posted in Part 6, that will become very clear to you that if the documents are not real, the photographs absolutely cannot be real. If the story is phony, the pictures have to be phony. You understand?
Now, sure.
I attacked his autobiographical and biographical quotations and statements of fact, which are not statements of fact in reality, because I debunked them. Then I went after the documentation, and then I came up with some really interesting outside-the-box type of research, where I'm doing research on the characters in Frank Marshall Davis's Sex Rebels book. The couple that he supposedly had sex with that he brags about in this book were Dot and Lloyd, he refers to them as. That would have been Dorothy Yamamoto. Is it Yamamoto or Yamaguchi? I think it's Yamamoto. She was the second female vice president at the Bank of Hawaii, next to Madeline Dunham. And Lloyd was a chemist and genetic engineer, and he worked with the CIA. He worked with my informant's parents, and he worked with a Dr. George King, who is an unidentified person in this photograph, until one of my listening audience sent me an audio file that took me to a website in California, and I saw this guy's picture there. And I said, this is the guy unidentified in the photo. Turns out to be an MI6 agent. So we have CIA MI6 working with the Rockefellers, working for the Rockefellers as agents.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're putting that together.
Yes.
Because I think you know that I belong to the Association for Intelligence Officers. And
I didn't know that.
I've been so wrapped up in this grand jury thing that I knew there was a whole other side to this story. And I knew that it needed to be investigated I suspect if you've done this, you also know about the intelligence community's connections with the Ford Foundation as well, right?
Absolutely, I do, yes.
All right. And you're right. When this stuff comes out, you know what the big problem with this kind of stuff is, Don? Is it is so big, and that you're going to have real trouble getting people to believe it, because it sounds like a spy novel.
Well, yeah, that's true. I've been able to basically discern what's going on and then go out and find the facts to support what I'm seeing, okay? Or what, and I'm not talking about imagining this stuff. I get a real feel for what's really going on. And I'm known for this. And I've been able to go out doggedly through going through, pouring through documents, looking at records, talking to people. I've stumbled across some real, troughs, if you want to call it, of information. And, you know, you want to talk about finding a needle in a haystack. I'm finding haystacks of needles within the haystacks.
You know what intelligence work is like, Don? Intelligence work isn't anything to do with James Bond. Intelligence work is pawing through just reams upon reams of data, hoping that there's a little nugget in there that you could fit into some of the other pieces of the puzzle and eventually get an understanding of what it is that's going on. I mean, I mean it. You would not believe it because it's so non-romantic. There are CIA analysts who read phone books. Talk about an exciting job.
You know? I've read my share. I've read my share, and I've gone through plenty of databases, and I've discovered some really interesting databases too. I've discovered aliases.
Yeah, what you can find if you're persistent enough, and you're that kind of like a bloodhound that you know that can pick up the faintest of scents, and you keep tracking it down, and eventually it pays off if you stick with it. But my goodness, that kind of research is really tiring. You have to be. You almost have to be a special kind of obsessive person to even do that kind of work. Because it just is your wife still talking to you?
Well, I'm not married, so I don't have that problem.
that also accounts for you having the freedom to do it. Yeah, it is sometimes a very difficult job to do that kind of research. But I really congratulate you on it. And I'm going to make a serious point here for a second, Don. The reason I'm congratulating you is you said the people need to know. There is a huge angst, a chasm of despair and confusion, and people want to believe that you can do something about it, but they've got nothing I do will do any good, which is sort of a sign of depression. Mm-hmm. And you'll find a whole generation of people that have turned cynical. We've lost. The good people have lost. And there's no way to recover it. And no matter what we do, nothing's going to do any good. That attitude is one of the hardest things that we've had to overcome with American Grand Jury.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason that article I wrote, at one point when I'm trying to promote it, I say 3,800 hopeful words. Because I want people to understand that the fight is not lost, that there really is good, solid information where that you can counter what it is that's going on. And keep in mind, the key here is, of course, the kind of thing that we're talking about. The real key to this is finding out what Mr. Obama's secret identity is. And I'm not just talking about the birth certificate.
Oh, no. You will be amazed at what I come out with. Let me just say that. And so will the listening audience. They expect that of me, though. So
I'll tell you what. Let me play. I run my own radio program, too, so let me do a favor for you. Hey, Don, where can we find that article?
Okay, you go to my website. The one that I've yet to write, you mean, or the ones I've written?
Well, the ones you've written and the one you're about to write.
Okay, well, those will all be at my website, directlightproductions.com.
Direct life?
Light, as in light. The light from the sun, for example.
Okay.
Direct Light Productions, with an S on the end, .com. You click on articles.
All right.
The index page will open up, and the most recent articles at the top. As you scroll down, you can go as far back as you want to. I recommend to everyone to read all six of the Three Stooges Go to Washington. Actually, there are two. They're sort of like teasers. They're preparatory for letting the public know that these were coming out in the Idaho Observer. And they're short pieces, 400 or 500 words, just describing what one can expect to see in these. And I kept my word. I actually came out with more than I promised. And it's very exhaustive genealogical work, comparison of facts, analysis of statements that were made, conflicting timelines, and then, you know, when, as I mentioned, we get into the story and the pictures don't fit the story, and then you start to see anachronisms in the photographs. For instance, a wedding ring in a 1983, an alleged 1983 photograph with the grandparents. Now, the wedding ring wouldn't have come into the picture until October 18th of 1992, yet Obama's wearing this ring in 1983. Well, the only way that can happen is if the characters were photoshopped into the picture. Obama's grandfather has three arms and three hands. Only you can only see two of the hands. And the way you see the second hand is impossible on the basis of not seeing the arm at all. You're not seeing arm number two and arm number three. In other words, he's putting his hand in an impossible position. And the only way he could do that is if he had three arms.
Yeah, I like the galaxy you have here on your front page, too. Yeah, that's direct light, all right. Okay, look, I'm at your homepage, and you
look
go
at the
to
top.
Articles.
Yeah, just click on articles.
Okay. Well, I think I've done enough helping you plug your own website.
Okay. Now, I read your article, and I would like you to give out the link to that. It's absolutely fantastic. You're a great writer. In fact, if I didn't know better, I'd say I wrote it myself.
You know what? Look, good researchers do that. Because what you're doing is you're trying to get facts.
Yes.
And then you're trying to substantiate those facts. Because you know how people are. They want to know, how do you know that? And so you say what it is you know, and then you tell them how it is you know it. So the style really is a kind of complimentary amongst people that are researchers. Probably the best researcher I know and the best writer I know in that regard is James Michener. I don't know if you know it, but he's famous for doing impeccable research for the novels that he writes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, anyway, sure. Look, it's all over the net. All you have to do is just type in Obama and Oh My God, or my name, Sam Sewell, and I shouldn't have said Oh My God, because what it is it's the letters OMG.
Yes.
My wife is a very proper woman, and she refers to it as Oh My Gosh. So, and then
okay.
The other thing is my internet identity is Aristotle the Hun. And that's the other pen name that I used when I wrote the article. So you type in Sam Sewell or Aristotle the Hun and just the initials OMG, and you'll come up with it. The only thing I want you to be careful about is some people copied it without bothering to embed the links. And a good deal of the value of this document is the embedded links.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that whichever one you get, since it's pretty easy to find, make sure that whichever one you get, that the embedded links are there so that you can click them and go to the evidence that's behind the story.
Yeah, I'm going to post that whole article, you know, with attribution and the links on my site. I did put a link to your site on my links page. So that's what I had time to do. I want to do it the right way, and I only publish I do my best to publish the truth. Let's put it that way. I publish articles that I feel support either my argument or enhance the things that we talk about on this show. And we talk about a lot of different topics, but we also present solutions as well. And certainly, American Grand Jury is a solution-oriented organization. That's what it's about, pure and simple.
You know what kicked it off is exactly that. Carl Swenson, the guy that did the Georgia Grand Jury, was so frustrated about talking into an echo chamber. Everybody's doing all of this rhetoric. Everybody's doing all of this argument. Everybody's saying, ain't it awful? And nobody was taking action. And he finally just got sick of it. And on his own, with hardly any background or help, he put together the Georgia Grand Jury and actually kicked off the entire grand jury movement. He really deserves some credit. I tease him about it because he's found out later that he could have done a better job. But I said, look, the first car that Henry Ford built was the one that was the hardest. All the rest of them were a lot easier to build after you got that first one. Mm-hmm. And he was genuinely the pioneer. So my hat's off to Carl Swenson out of the Georgia Citizens Grand Jury. He did a great job as far as getting the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember the name. Is that Stony Brook or Stonebridge or something like that? I can't remember the exact locale.
You might be thinking of Stone Mountain. Stone Mountain, Georgia?
No, I don't think. I don't think I'm confusing that with Stone Mountain. But is that where it is?
Carl's just north of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah, and by the way, Carl also served on the April 29th American Grand Jury. So he not only did his Georgia Grand Jury, but he then served on the April 29th Grand Jury for Bob Campbell, and then came back and reconvened his Georgia Grand Jury in order to add the treason charge to the fraud charge that he originally had indicted Mr. Obama for.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is going to be interesting. Now, I'm presuming that the difficulties that you mentioned when you said, well, you know, there's the downside to this, those are the attempts by the judges or prosecutors to adhere to the rules of the bar, which is admiralty law or maritime law. And they don't want us to know about the rights that we have, that we don't have to accept that contract. We're not parties to that contract.
Right. Some of them are that way. But you know what I honestly think it is? They've been doing it one way for so long that just because they're lawyers doesn't mean they know the law. The same thing is true of doctors. I don't know if you know it or not, but when doctors get out of med school, they don't do any more research. So they listen to drug salesmen for their research.
Mm-hmm.
And lawyers only research cases they're working on. And so I really think that the biggest progress is going to be made by simply educating these prosecuting attorneys and judges that there is a long and noble history to citizen grand juries. And when they're aware of it, and they're aware of what the Constitution says, and when they're aware of what the Supreme Court says about it, and what constitutional scholars that teach at various universities say about it. In other words, I honestly think it's more, the big challenge is the education part of it. Now, don't get me wrong, there are some people that are just going to refuse to be educated. Those are the people that have a political motive for blocking the indictment of Mr. Obama. But I think these other resistance or reluctance will be quickly overcome with just information.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the findings, and I don't know how much of this you're willing or able to go into on the air, or let's say outside of the purvey of the grand jury, when you're gathering evidence or presenting the evidence, in other words, you're going into the presentation or the information aspect of the hearing, you're trying to get some sort of official document. Has the issue of Freedom of Information Act come up at all?
We didn't need to.
Mm-hmm.
We had more than enough documentation to return an indictment. Keep in mind that grand juries don't have to come up with full evidence. They only need to come up with enough evidence to recommend to the court that this needs to be considered at a trial. And that's full evidence. Oh, by the way, I'd better say something about that, too, because this is really important. This may be the shortest trial in history. When a trial is ordered, the first thing that the judge does is he orders discovery. Discovery is a process at the beginning of every trial where all of the evidence that's going to be presented by both sides is put on the table. That's to prevent what they call trial by ambush. In other words, you know, in the Perry Mason stories, you know, somebody runs in the back of the courtroom in the last 5 minutes of the trial and resolves it all with a great big drama. That doesn't happen. If the evidence that you're going to present in the trial is not included in the discovery process, you don't get to include it later. So basically, all we're looking for is discovery anyway.
Well, so, if there was an intentional holding back of certain information, in other words, that, you know, let's say it was entered into the record by one side or the other that information was not available, yet all along it was, which would fall under perjury, would it not?
It would, and not only that, you couldn't find a lawyer that would do that. Because the lawyer himself had put himself on the line. And besides, if you think about it, it doesn't make any sense. If you don't put out the evidence to defend your case, guess what happens? You get found guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what it boils down to is Mr. Obama's going to need to put forward his college records from Occidental and Columbia and Harvard. He's going to have to release that original birth certificate that is in the safe in Hawaii. He's going to have to produce his passport records. He's going to have to produce his Immigration and Naturalization Service records from when he was a child and trotting around in international circles. And all of that needs to be presented. Now, in the off chance that Mr. Obama has spent almost $1 million to hide perfectly innocent documents, I know, that's absolutely ridiculous, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But if we find out upon presentment that I've been suspicious for all the wrong reasons, I shall be happy to apologize to Mr. Obama and all of his supporters that I was really foolish to be so suspicious just because the guy was hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, I can't imagine it's actually going to turn out that way. In my article, what I do is I say, what's most likely? Mr. Obama has spent $1 million to hide documents because they're innocent, or has he spent $1 million to hide documents because they're damaging?
Yeah.
Well, I don't really think that that's an open question. It seems to me like it's an easily answerable question. And I'm one of these guys. I can't even stand to leave a crossword puzzle unfinished.
Yeah.
So when I have somebody running for the president of the United States and they won't even reveal their background, I tend to get real suspicious about it, and I'm not going to settle down until I get significant answers for the questions I have. We need full disclosure.
Yes.
Mr. Obama, please practice the virtue of full disclosure.
Well,
settle all of this if you do.
Yeah. There seem to be some co-conspirators in this, and I'm sure most would agree, anyone that's really followed this, through the alternative media. We have congressional people who are aware of this, people in the Democratic National Committee who are aware of this. They've been notified of this. Howard Dean's office was notified. I know firsthand that they were notified. And the response of the secretary and his office at the DNC was, oh, we handled that in court. That was not handled in court.
No.
What that means is probably, I mean, if I were to read between the lines, we were able to bribe the right people to keep this from going to court. How else can you take that kind of a statement? And the Federal Elections Commission as well. Congress and the Senate.
Have you seen who the Federal Elections Commission is? They're all Obama's home folks.
Yeah.
They're all connected to Obama through the University of Chicago and other connections like that. I've got this marvelous researcher that is volunteering to work for me. And she digs up stuff that's almost unbelievable. And when she sent me the connections, and then she said, do you honestly think that the Federal Election Commission is going to audit Mr. Obama's accounts for election fraud, given who they are?
Yes.
Well, that's another one of those questions that didn't need to be asked.
Yeah. Now, is there any evidence, or are you at liberty to say if there's been any evidence regarding embezzlement of funds, either from the Treasury or from any of the public programs?
Yes, I can say it because it doesn't really, it really isn't confidential from the point of view of the grand jury. We didn't need that evidence, so we didn't use that evidence, but the evidence is being considered by other venues. I think just in the last couple of days, some new information on charges with Acorn there was a lot of foreign money that came into Obama's campaign and campaign contributions from such notable celebrities as Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and all of that sort of thing. I mean, they were even joking about it. That's how much they care about the Constitution.
Yeah.
There's just a ton of election fraud, election fundraising fraud, and election registration fraud. I think you heard that in court that one of the Acorn people said that more than half of the registrations were fraudulent that Acorn put together.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
My goodness. I mean, you know, what we really have... the whole election was a very dishonest election. And not only that, it was a fraudulent candidate. So we had a crooked election to elect a fraudulent candidate last time around.
Well, we could go back. You read my genealogical research on George Bush, you'll find the same thing. And I'm speaking about 41. you've got to read my stuff. I think you'll find quite a bit to sink your teeth into.
Yeah, I wish I had a review. You know what I should have done? I should have reviewed all of your stuff before I came onto your program.
Well, you have a week to do that.
That's
so
right.
You're on again.
That's right. I'm back next week, aren't I? I'll tell you what. I'm a little bit chagrined because you read at least the primary article that I asked you to read, and I did not go over your website, but I have it bookmarked now.
Okay.
Take a look at it between now and the next time we get together.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting, and this isn't about tooting my own horn, but there's been a lot of corroboration from readership of the Idaho Observer as well as the listeners to this radio show. And I've done similar investigating and broadcasts on 9/11, a deep, deep forensic study of the videos, and I found a paper trail. There is a very, very compelling paper trail on 9/11, and I'm not talking about airline put options. Some of this will blow your mind. Some of the so-called victims are traveling around the country, engaged heavily in business. And so it's something to consider because the same people are involved in that are involved in what's going on now. You know, there are actually tontine contracts to take people out that occurred on 9/11 and that are occurring every time there's a plane crash or a shooting in a public place.
Just out of curiosity, do you know anything about the young man that was involved in the State Department breaking into Obama's records, who was getting ready to testify and was murdered? Have you heard? Do you know that issue?
What can you give the name of that person? Or do you know?
I can't remember it now because I don't have it in front of me, but I think you remember that it was revealed that some people that were outside employees, matter of fact, they were hired by a security company that works for the Obama campaign, and the three of these operatives began secretly accessing the passport records of the candidates.
Now, I remember hearing something about it, but not in any specificity.
And, you know, and I looked at it, and I'm saying, well, that's pretty shaky, particularly since these guys work for Obama. And I'm asking myself, what were they trying to do? Were they trying to scrub Obama's passport records, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And one young man who was fired from the State Department for being part of that was scheduled to testify, and he was shot. Killed.
Hmm.
And I'll tell you what, I'll look that up for you and hand it to you, because just in case, you know how these things are. There's little networks where you find something like I just mentioned that's not on the top of your heap, and you put it in the puzzle, and oh
yeah.
My gosh, it fits here and it fits there.
Well, yeah. I began investigating the Buffalo plane crash and did a broadcast with Dr. Kasim Khalil on Republic Broadcasting Network. And then a follow-up show on this network an hour later. And we covered all the aspects of that Buffalo plane crash, and it fit the cookie cutter of a Tontine contract headed by Siddeley Austin. Now, that's Michelle Obama's law firm. That's supposedly the law firm that Obama worked for in the summer under her tutelage. And David Hawkins and Field McConnell have uncovered the financial records. They've been tracking this stuff on the internet, and they can tie all this into these Tontine contracts, where this is similar to a Ponzi scheme, except that works differently. The players pool their money, and one of them falls by the wayside. The assets go to the survivors until there's one man standing. Or one woman standing, and they feel that Michelle Obama is actually the beneficiary of these contracts. They've brought compelling evidence to this show, and that's something that you may want to look into also, because it's they can reap maybe a couple of billion dollars depending on what kind of contract it is. 9/11 was such an event. They had massive insurance policies on the firemen that were there, and they lost what 345 firemen on 9/11, and a lot of the military don't know that they may take out a $5,000 policy on themselves and the members of their family, and I think they're entitled to get up to $35,000 worth of life insurance. But they have secret contracts, and this also came out from Walter Burian, that they have secret contracts or policies on these same soldiers for $1 million each. So when these guys die, they're making a ton of money, and they get the news media in to film these events as you know, sort of like a snuff film. In other words, here's the proof. It's amazing all the things they do. They would be someone, they'd be a tremendous source of information.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn on this researcher that I've got to you. I'm not going to mention her name, but sometime in the next couple of days, you'll be getting a contact from what I call her the best detective I've got.
Mm-hmm.
He is able to hook up connections with anybody and everybody. The work that she did on the law firm that you mentioned out of Chicago, Michelle Obama's old law firm.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, you cannot believe some of the things that are connected. And she's tracked it back to the universities. And that most of these people involved serve on the board of trustees of universities around the United States.
Mm-hmm.
She's done some amazing research on this. And I almost feel guilty about her because she's so detailed in what she does that sometimes I can't keep up with it, and I'm so busy with the grand jury thing that you may actually be a better source or a better recipient for her research than I am.
Hmm.
Anyway, I'll tell her to contact you and share her research with you because she's really great.
Well, okay. Well, it sounds like we're building a coalition here, which is great.
Yeah, I know. It worked well. That's how the first American Revolution started.
Well, we could have a motto. I don't know if you have a motto, but, you know, I never did like this change you can believe in or change we can believe in. How about change you know you're going to get?
Ah, right.
Change you can expect.
Yes, well, you know that thing about hope and change. I'm sorry, those were things that appeal to emotions, and I'd rather hear the nuts and bolts of the policy and the procedures and the tactics. That turns me on more than touchy-feely kinds of things.
Yeah, I'm being somewhat sarcastic, you know.
That's allowed.
Well, what can someone do? Let's say they want to be, you know, someone in the listening audience wants to be on one of these grand juries, or they want to start one in their area, let's say. And not that it has to remain exclusive to their area on the basis of what you've described.
No, there's three ways to do it. One is join one of the national grand juries. And you do that by just going to AmericanGrandJury.org, and in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage is a place where you can click for email. That's Bob Campbell's private email address.
Mm-hmm.
And you contact Bob there, and there are two functions. One is to be on the grand jury. The other is to be an agent for presenting the indictments to judicial districts and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And you don't have to have served on the grand jury in order to be sworn as an agent to do the presentments of the indictments to the different jurisdictions. So there's two roles that you can do, and the first stage of those two roles is to serve on the national grand jury. Doesn't cost you a penny. You can do it from the privacy of your own home, and Bob carries the expense for mailing out the presentment packets after it's all over. So Bob didn't want anybody to get the idea that he was making any money out of it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'd rather keep it pure by absorbing the total cost of it himself. Rather, and even though he wouldn't have to, my God, people would be happy to give him money. As a matter of fact, a lot of the people wanted to, and he keeps turning them down. Anyway, that's the first thing. The other thing is you can also form a grand jury that you might want in your own state. And there are two ways to do that. You can either ask Bob to establish a virtual grand jury meeting room for your state grand jury, and you can all examine the evidence there, and you can all meet and vote there. And Bob already has all of the paperwork that's necessary to turn it into presentment papers. And all you have to do is show up. There are some people that want to actually do the face-to-face grand juries. Bob also has all of the information you need to how to swear in a grand jury, how to make sure that your people are actually qualified, make sure that they understand the protocol of how to operate a grand jury, how the grand jury needs to supervise all of that. And if you wanted to meet in the courthouse, in your hometown, generally speaking, that you can do that. You just call up the, usually it's the clerk of court is the office, and you tell them that you have a citizen's grand jury and you want a room at the courthouse to meet, and there's no reason for them not to cooperate with that. But if they say no, it doesn't make any difference because you can meet in a church, you can meet in your living room, you can meet in a public park. And then when you get done having your own face-to-face grand jury, you give the results of that voting on that grand jury and the evidence that's provided to you by Mr. Campbell, and then he will get together the presentment papers for your face-to-face grand jury so you folks can there present them to the jurisdictions there in your own town. So you can do it face-to-face. You can do it with your own state grand jury on the Internet or face-to-face. And if you aren't able to pull together 25 people in your own town or your own state, you can join the national online grand jury and do it that way. So there's room for everybody, and Bob has created the kind of logistical support where anybody that wants to can participate in the grand jury that's looking into the eligibility of the pretender to the presidency.
Wow. Sounds fantastic. Now, generally speaking, how long does it take someone to form one, let's say from scratch, on the basis that you have this in place, pretty much?
Like, you remember when I said earlier that the hardest car that Ford had to build was the first one?
Mm-hmm.
Well, since it's already been created, the hardest part for anybody that wants to be, let's say, put together their own grand jury, their own state grand jury, is getting 25 people.
Okay, now is the state grand jury eligible for bailout money like Ford?
I would disqualify any grand jury that attempted to do that.
I'm being facetious there. So, accountability. Accountability is a big issue with a lot of people. You know, the media is pumping and beating this drum of Barack Obama, the loved Messiah.
Yeah.
You know, they are conspirators, or they are co-conspirators in this whole fraud. There's obviously an intention. Now, would you consider going after the ownership of the media, since, you know, they're basically, what, five or six families that control the entire media? We're talking about mainstream, you know, newspapers, radio stations, TV stations that are definitely, lying to the public.
You know what the problem is with that? I wouldn't know how to do it. I know how to take on a politician. I know that they're subject to the will of the people. The way the organizational chart works for the United States of America is at the top of the chart is we the people. Then comes the government.
Yeah, well, if they've been bribed, for instance, and you can show that, you can track the money, it's always follow the money.
Now, you're right that if a crime happened, of course you could do it. And since grand juries can and have the power to investigate any crime, but I'll be honest with you, I don't want to do that. I got my hands full.
Yeah.
If other people want to put together a citizen's grand jury to take on the media, I'm all in favor of it because I think, next to terrorism, I think the media is probably the most dangerous thing to our republic that has come along in a long time.
Well, that's exactly the point I'm trying to get at here, Sam, is that 9/11, for example, there's so much fraud that was perpetrated by the media. You had the BBC announcing almost a half an hour before Building 7 came down, the 47-story skyscraper, the third building that was imploded. They announced it had fallen while it was still on camera. How did they know that building was coming down? You see, there's a conspiracy there.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir. There's a lot about 9/11. People saw planes on TV, but they ran on a delay. And if you study the slow motion, you can see the plane going into the building, and the building repairs itself as the plane's going in, frame by frame. You know, when you get into really detailed forensic analysis of this stuff, it was all a fiction. It was smoke and mirrors, special effects. And you can do that with the digital media. It's no different from Barack Obama's photographs. This is the point I'm trying to make. The terrorism is being perpetrated by the government and by the banks. Do you know, under the Patriot Act, committing financial crimes is terrorism?
Yes. And as a matter of fact, I had a lady call me today that has her own little scheme about how to get rid of Mr. Obama. She says that there's reason enough to think that he is a Manchurian candidate, that he is a foreign spy, that he is a terrorist, and that the way that he has frozen some of these bank accounts serves the purposes of terrorism. And under the Patriot Act, you only have 60 days to do full documentation of your entire history.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to bring the charges of Mr. Obama being a suspected terrorist to the Patriot Act and go after him that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, that I agree with that. I totally agree. I mean, there's a lot more. There's much to be discovered, but that's for another show. We're about out of time, Sam. I want to give you a chance to sort of recap anything that you might want to cover, or something that I wasn't intelligent enough to ask a question about, as a closing comment and something to encourage the listening audience or to motivate them to action.
Okay, yeah, because this is probably the most important thing that I can say.
Okay.
Just have hope. This is not an impossible situation, and don't you listen to anybody that tells you that a grand jury has no authority unless it has been initiated by a judge in a court. That simply is not true. And that prosecutors can either be invited by the grand jury to participate in the grand jury proceedings, or prosecutors can be excluded. Grand juries are legitimately a separate branch of government, and they exist for the purpose of one of their purposes anyway, is investigating corruption within the government. And it's a good thing that they stand outside the government in that way, and they even have full subpoena powers. People don't realize that. So the grand juries are incredibly powerful, but the legal establishment has been trying to hide the fact that they have that power, and for the last few decades, that power has not been exercised by the citizens. So it's time to dust off the cobwebs off these grand juries and get them back fully functional, because it's probably the best chance we have for the citizens of this country to stay in charge of the country. The other thing I'd say by way of reminder is, don't you think that there isn't more than adequate, there's enough evidence to indict 6 Obamas. And it isn't like it's airy-fairy, maybe speculative or hearsay evidence. There is the same kind of evidence that meets the rules of evidence and the rules of scientific methodology that you might find in the best kind of jury situations and evidence situations to indict Mr. Obama. So there's good, solid evidence. There is real power in the citizens' grand juries. And so have hope, citizens. Don't you think that it's all lost, and don't you think that there isn't a way for the citizens of the United States to still rescue our beloved country.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Now, there is one more question that popped up, and since I've got you on the air and we're still rolling here, I'm going to ask if or for the sake of referring to a name, if I were to say to you, well, we don't know for certain that Obama's name is Barry Satoru, or Barack Satoru, or whatever you want to call him, or Barack Obama. In other words, if there's another name that you must consider, have you created a contingency in naming him with, let's say, does 1 through 100. If we were to take aliases into consideration and a likely family name that,
yes,
that has not been mentioned, do you have a contingency built into these indictments?
Yes, the indictment is for all of the AKAs, also
okay,
known as.
Yes.
All of the ones that we know about, and then there's the generic or persons that might, or other names and other persons that are referenced by the previous aliases.
Yeah.
That's just a standard thing that you do. When you're dealing with some slick guy that's got, you know, half a dozen aliases, you have to kind of cover those bases and dot those I's and cross those T's, because you can't issue an indictment for somebody and then the guy says, well, that's not me. You got the wrong indictment.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
okay,
they took care of that. Keep in mind, we didn't do this completely by ourselves. It isn't like we didn't have some pretty high-powered legal advice behind what it is that we've done to come this far. And Bob and I are both very grateful for that, because we don't know what we're doing when it comes to the law profession. We can guess. We're well-educated laymen.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some common sense, but we also needed to rely on some of the expert advice from attorneys. By the way, you know what I like about our attorneys? They remain nameless. So
okay,
many of the attorneys involved in this eligibility thing look like they're trying to grab the spotlight from one another.
Yeah.
Now we have two of them involved in a lawsuit against each other. And the attorneys that were involved with the American grand jury don't even want their names to be used. They want
okay
to be completely secret, and I really admire that.
Well, I have someone that I'll recommend to you later on. This person doesn't have a name either. So it's someone I know will likely be able to help. So,
all right, good. I'd love that referral.
Okay. Well, Sam Sewell, it has been a pleasure talking to you, and we have you scheduled to appear next Monday, the 18th, on Evident Footprints. I look forward to that interview, as well as likely a lot of feedback from the listeners through the grapevine and what have you. I know there's going to be a lot of people listening to the archive of this show as well.
All right, and please share whatever feedback you get with me. You've got my email address.
Yes, yes, I'll be happy to do that. And I want to thank you for being on, and maybe we can get Bob Campbell to come on the next time.
Well, yeah, because Bob actually lives in China, so he's exactly 12 hours difference from me. So Bob is just probably finishing up his mid-afternoon nap right now at 2:41, like he actually gets a chance to take a nap. But you know, I tease Bob and tweak him a little bit. By the way, I want all your listeners to do a favor. If you decide to sign up to the American Grand Jury, when you send the email, I want you to just include the little message Sam sent me. That's my way of tweaking Bob, because when Bob asked me to take on the national spokesperson job, I've got quite a background in PR, and I told him, I said, look, if you want me to do it, I want to warn you, I'm going to bury you in grand jurors. And right after the press release went out on the April 29th grand jury, I called him the following day, and he had over 300 grand jurors that he was processing.
Wow.
And so I rather like the idea of anybody that signs up, you know, to just say Sam sent me. You know, I'm trying to hold true to that thing I told him I'd bury him.
Have they started calling you Uncle Sam yet, or
no? But I all of my because there's two Dr. Sewells here.
Uh-huh.
My wife is also a doctor, and so I ask when people call that they ask for Dr. Sam, so that there's not any confusion as to which doctor they want to talk to.
Yes. Okay, well, again, I want to say thank you very much. I look forward to your next interview. We'll be in touch in the meantime, and I wish you the best. And
all right.
I'm gonna...
Thank you, Don. It was good talking with you.
My pleasure, too.
Right.
Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Dr. Sam Sewell. By all means, go to the AmericanGrandJury.org website. That's all you've got to type in, AmericanGrandJury.org. In the meantime, special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible here on bbsradio.com. Seth Hedrick for the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me again tomorrow night. I've got another repeat performance or appearance, let's say, with Dr. B. And we're going to talk about some health issues and a few other things that he may have up his sleeve. In the meantime, I wish you all a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.